Welcome to Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics. Joining me today is probably my oldest and closest friend, Chris Bojalian. Chris is the author of 17 novels by my count. His book, Midwives, was Oprah Book Club selection. His latest book, The Sleepwalker, will be available in October 2017 on paperback, and his next book, The Flight Attendant, will be published in March 2019. Chris, in addition to his work as a novelist, has been a speaker at the Compliance and Ethics Institute. Chris, thanks for taking the time today to join us.
Adam, it's a pleasure to speak with you, and I think it's worth noting that you appear in so many of those books, either in the dedication or the acknowledgments, including The Flight Attendant. It's wonderful to have you in my life and to make my books better.
Thank you, and it's a good thing it's a podcast so people can't see me blushing. Let's dive in on this. You know, one of the things that we've discussed before, and we discussed at the Compliance and Ethics Institute and elsewhere, is how interesting it is that, you know, people say they don't like ethics training, but novels and movies, TV shows, all of them really revolve around questions of right and wrong and people thrown into situations where they have to make tough decisions. I'm going to start with the people who make the bad decisions, which are the bad guys. Why do you think that there's somewhat of a tendency for people to root for and identify with a bad guy?
I don't remember who first said this. I've seen the quote attributed to Milton: if the devil didn't exist, man would have to invent him. I think there's an enormous amount of truth to that. But I also think in the 21st century, we are really drawn to moral ambiguity. We are drawn to characters who have at least as much darkness in them as they have light. And I think of Breaking Bad and Walter White, an ostensibly good man who seriously goes off the rails and becomes seriously awful. I think of how hypnotized we all were in the first decade of the 21st century by Enron and all of the egregious mistakes that people who clearly were once good people started to make. I think we're drawn to that in part because we know what we are capable of and we know what we don't want to do.
And so some of it, I think, is probably based on what you're saying. It's just a little bit of the "there but for the grace of God go I."
It's so easy for us to make these moral mistakes. It's so easy for us to go down that slippery slope where we're cutting a corner here and we say, it's okay, everyone cuts this corner. And the next thing we know, we are, we created a meth lab and a meth empire in New Mexico.
And now on the flip side of it, you know, when you're creating characters, when you make a hero, you can't make the person too good, correct? I mean, there has to be some sort of dirt under the fingernails for people to be identifiable as somebody I would see as a real person I might like. I mean, is that true?
Maybe not necessarily a person we might like. I don't know if that's quite as important in literature today as it might have been once. And again, that goes back to, I think, the really, really interesting ways that film and television have changed how we read books. Tony Soprano and Don Draper have, I think, dramatically affected what we are willing to tolerate in even good guys. I think it's really interesting to debate a character like Don Draper. And where would a character like Don Draper fit into the SCCE? So when I'm creating characters, I'm always after that gray area. Those characters who are, if they're going to be the evil characters, have something compelling about them so that we don't automatically loathe them. We might not approve of them. We might even root against them. But there's something about them that draws us to them. Likewise, my good character is exactly as you said. I love your analogy. If their nails are too perfect, if they're too squeaky clean, they're A, not wholly believable, and B, because we know that none of us are perfect, it's a little bit harder to empathize with them. You were unbelievably helpful with my next book, The Flight Attendant. And there are two women in there who are, one is in theory the good person and one is in theory the bad person, but I think in interesting ways, readers will be pulling or hoping for both of them and wishing that somehow there could be a happy ending for both, when it's really clear there just cannot be.
You know, one of the things you just said made me think of something. When you talk about how characters like Don Draper, Tony Soprano influenced our thinking and influenced the way people look at books, you know, I'm thinking of a book that turned into a movie, The Godfather, and, you know, the whole notion that it's only business. You know, I often sometimes think these things influence how people approach work. I mean, if you watch, you know, The Godfather, where, you know, people do all sorts of horrible things and they say it's not personal, it's only business. I do wonder if that ends up having an impact on our lives much more than we think it does.
Oh, I think you're onto something. I think that's really smart. And I think that's why an organization like yours is important and why it matters, because it is so easy for us under the guise of business or law to say, oh, the human factor isn't relevant, or this human being is expendable because it's business. And the digital age has dramatically changed so many jobs and so many needs. I mean, I work in, you know, two businesses. I'm a novelist and a journalist. And both books and newspapers have seen the digital age dramatically change both the numbers of people who are needed and how you make a living.
Yeah, and at the same time, I think, you know, all this transformation, you know, transforms our ability to relate to people when they're much more faceless or far away. It changes, I think, our perceptions of sort of what we owe them and what's okay to do. But in reality, the rules really don't change. Even though I can't see somebody, doesn't mean that there's not a person there. Let me ask, you know, question.
I just want to jump in because you said something that I think is really interesting. The reality, I think, is that there are certain moral absolutes in this world, which is why the fact that people are so morally ambiguous complicates all of our lives. We know right and wrong, and we know as people that we are infinitely capable of sliding along the surface, getting a little closer to wrong than right.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, I think, one of the things that, you know, makes your writing interesting is the fact that people, you know, are constantly on this sort of slippery slope. You know, the question I have, because, you know, people, when somebody does something wrong at work, often there's others around them sort of seeing the slow slide into this, or people find themselves doing it. How slowly do you think people, you know, when you're writing, how quickly can someone go down that slope and still be a character someone identifies with? Do you find that you have to write it as sort of a slow progression, or do you find that it really doesn't matter? It just has to be a situation where it's credible that someone could do the wrong thing.
Well, I never know where my stories are going when I start to write them. I depend upon my characters to take me by the hand and lead me through the dark of the story. And I'm going to say that in all of my books, it's varied. Sometimes there has been one dramatic bad decision that causes a domino effect, and sometimes it's a more gradual slippery slope. And sometimes I think it's both. In that book that you mentioned earlier, the Flight Attendant, that comes out in March, The book opens with a woman waking up in Dubai next to a dead guy, a guy she picked up on the plane the night before, and decides, I'm just cutting and running. She puts the Do Not Disturb sign on the door of the hotel room and gets back on her plane to Charles de Gaulle and then America. So there is one spectacularly bad decision. But then, over the course of the next 350 pages, she goes down that slippery slope, gradually digging herself, or I'm not going to say digging herself a grave, painting herself into a corner. You know the other thing I think the flight attendant makes me think of in regard to the work of the SCCE is that very, very often the cover-up is more problematic than the crime. And I'm sure that there are so many mistakes that executives make that the cover-up is even worse.
Yeah, well, a large part of compliance is about stopping problems when they're small. I think that's, the bigger issue is the little mistake that ends up getting amplified over time because people don't deal with it in the proper way. And really, it's compliance at its best is getting in and, well, if not preventing the problem, at least getting it handled early before it can get really big and out of control. One last question, because we're running out of time. It's always struck me this strange thing that people really love watching morality being discussed in movies, TV, books. They love the right and wrong. What would you do? All of that. And then when you sit them down and say, okay, we're going to talk to you about ethics issues, or we're going to talk to you about what the law says and what situations you might be in, people say, oh, this is boring. I know that. Why do you have a sense of why in one context it's so welcome and why in another it tends to be so unwelcome?
I think it has something to do with the fact that we love courtroom dramas on television and film, but good God, we never want to be involved in a courtroom ourselves. I think to a certain extent, there are two things going on. The first is that, oh my gosh, we've all seen the law books. This is going to put me to sleep. This is going to be the melatonin of the morning. And then there's that sense of, this is a little closer to home than I want it to be. I'm learning about stuff that impacts me, that impacts my business. It's one thing for me to watch this stuff on television where I've got that safe remove or read it in a wonderful novel by Scott Turow. It's another thing to realize that this is real stuff. This is my future and my company, and it gets a little disconcerting.
Yeah, I also wonder too sometimes, as you were saying this, it made me think of the fact that there's a difference also in that when you're looking at it, as entertainment, you're looking at it as entertainment, but when somebody's talking to you about it, there's sort of this natural human tendency to say, oh, well, I would never do that immediately. And so because of it, it seems less relevant.
I think that's really spot on.
We'll end with you agreeing with me, because I will admit that I like it when people agree with me, which may be a bad thing in the world of compliance. But Chris, thanks. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today, and thank all of you for listening. I'm Adam Turteltaub from Compliance Perspectives saying have a very good day.
Thanks for having me on. I had a great time.